Welcome to the BioFit Blueprint Bootcamp Nutrigenomics module on blood sugar. I'm super excited to share this because this is an issue that affects 93% of the population. And in this particular video, we're going to talk about the SNPs that are related to blood sugar, why it's important to look for them, when it's important to look for them, and how to correlate it with history and with the blood testing. So before we begin, as usual, this information is not medical advice. It's just education, and it's intended to share with you so that you can share with your clients from my research and my experience in over 30 years of clinical practice. And if you are working with somebody, you got to make sure that you let them know that it's not medical advice, that you are educating them and empowering them to take charge of their health. So let's start by looking at blood glucose lab testing. We've got four columns here. First one is the ideal range. The second one is when we consider them in pre-insulin resistance or insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, and diabetes. So it's a continuum. So we, instead of just looking at fasting glucose like conventional medicine does, we're looking at a bunch of different things. We're looking at fasting glucose, plus we're looking at triglyceride HDL ratio. So triglycerides high and HDL low means that this is a risk factor. We're also looking at fasting insulin. It's mostly not done, except when people already have diabetes. And that's, in my opinion, a little bit too late. And then we look at hemoglobin A1C. So the ideal ranges for these, 75 to 89 on the glucose, triglycerides 50 to 90, HDL 50 to 90. Ideal ratio is 1:1. Fasting insulin between 2 and 5. The closer to 2, the better. But if it's too close to 2 and they still have elevated peaks and valleys, you really want to look and make sure that they are producing enough or they don't have an autoimmune disease. And then we have hemoglobin A1C, 4.5 to 5 is ideal. So when we get into what we call pre-insulin resistance or actual insulin resistance, the fasting glucose could be anywhere from 90 to 119. I consider it pre-insulin resistance when it goes above 90, and then medically they're considered an insulin resistance once it goes over 100, but before it hits 120. Triglycerides greater than 90, HDL less than 65. Whenever we hit those thresholds, we know that there's something going on and we need to be investigating it. Metabolic syndrome, triglycerides greater than 110, same as with diabetes, and then metabolic syndrome less than 55 for the HDL and less than 55 for diabetes. So these are numbers, I'm just not going to go through every number on this chart, but these are numbers you want to keep handy. You want to make sure that when you're looking at the SNPs as we're going through, that you're also looking at their blood sugar. So let's look at, you know, historically, right? Things that are going on for people. When we have imbalanced blood sugar, we want to look at the base, right? The freedom pillars, but we also want to look at what's going on there. Map their postprandial glucose. We've all learned to do that if you've been through our insulin resistance program or if you've been through level 3 of our NEPT program. You want to look at their waist-hip ratio. When the waist-hip ratio is high, if it's above 1 in males and above 80% in females, then there's an indication of blood sugar imbalance. And then there's the tests, which we just went through. In addition to the normal quote-unquote tests, there are times when we want to look at antibodies. We absolutely want to look at antibodies. When we do an insulin and it's low, fasting insulin, and we're looking and their blood sugars are higher, their peaks are higher, then I would say we want to do a postprandial insulin. Again, this is getting beyond this. We went over this. It's a review, basically, of everything that was in the blood chemistry. So this is a chart. You have access to this chart, and I recommend that you print it out on long paper. There's a lot of these, and they're really good to give you an idea of the different SNPs. Are you going to use all these SNPs in the session where we're going to be doing our blood chemistry and our genes and looking at that plus their history? No, this is too much. But when there's a family history, a chronic history, they're heading towards Alzheimer's, they have a parent who's heading towards Alzheimer's, you may want to be looking at some of this stuff in more detail, right? most people are going to fall into the 93%. Get it? The 93% that are metabolically unhealthy. And when you can find these genes that correlate, it's great. So these just list the genes, just a summary for you. This is a 16-page document. We're giving it to you as a bonus. And then you've got the different things that you can do later and what you should recommend. Okay, we're not going to go into all this detail because we're talking about in BioFit doing a basic session, not overwhelming people, but pulling things out. But this is for your future reference. So I want to look right now at Self-Decode. And this is a report that you can generate in Self-Decode. So the blood sugar SNPs are not like really clearly obvious in any of the reports, like genetic detoxification. They throw a few of them at the end. And some of them just don't show them at all, except mixed in with other SNPs. Self-Decode, you can actually do a metabolic health report. And also the other one that we're going to give you is the blood sugar metabolic health actually in genetic life hacks. So all of those should be on your page, on your advanced resources page, as well as on the page with this video, so that you have easy access to it. So we're going to go and shift to the report so I can show you in real time how helpful these reports can be. I recommend that you don't necessarily use Self-Decode to show people their reports because it can be overwhelming, but that you use it for your own research. And you can get the practitioner version or you can get your own general version and you can generate these reports. If you want the practitioner version, you can put a certain number of patients in there and then you pay for each additional one. So let's just look at the metabolic report here in Self-Decode. This is just for your reference, but I want to show you how much there is here. This is way more than you want to share with a client, but this is for your future reference and for your more in-depth reference. So in terms of metabolic rate, there's a bunch of SNPs there. In terms of visceral fat, you know, not a good thing, right? Bad tendency towards visceral fat in this particular report. Weight regain, right? They lose weight and then they gain it back, right? Usually related to insulin resistance or an FTO gene. Overweight. So this is an average risk of overweight, but you can tell by looking at this what their rates, what their risks are, and you may pull various pieces out of this to share with them. And I'll share with you the most important genes to be looking at, but this gives you the long list. Okay. And you can actually read a little bit more about it. And you know, they give you some recommendations. You're going to have your own, et cetera. Blood sugar control, fasting glucose. So this actually shows you the measurements, right? The fasting glucose, right? Where's that glucose rise? What are some of those SNPs that are related to that? This one is related to insulin resistance, right? So this is typical, and it says typical risk. Typical risk means you're in the 93%, right? Because most people have a bad risk. Hemoglobin A1C, likely to be elevated or typical, which is going to be elevated as far as we're concerned. What's the tendency towards low blood sugar? And again, SNPs are SNPs. They're just genes. That doesn't mean this is real, but it just means that they have the risk of these things and that we need to educate them on their diet lifestyle choices to avoid this high blood sugar, right? So in this particular case, it's both. And a lot of times that's related to insulin resistance, right? The thyroid health was included in here. We'll go back. It was just happened to be in the metabolic report. And we'll review that when we get to the thyroid. All right. So the Self-Decode report gave us a lot of information and a lot of SNPs. It's way overkill, way more than what you want to be doing with somebody who's coming in for a gene and blood chemistry evaluation session. But it gives you some extra goodies for when you're working with that person. You sign them up for your program and you start working with them for 3 or 6 or 9 months or a year. And you're helping them with getting these things put back in balance. So let's look at the major SNPs that are related to blood sugar. These are the ones that you really should be looking at for all of these folks. IGF-1R is insulin-like growth factor 1 receptor. So it's a protein that's very similar in structure to insulin, and it binds to the insulin receptor, which means that the insulin can't get in and it's more likely to have insulin resistance. By the way, on many of these slides, I put resources that you can go further. I mean, I know some of you just want to learn as much as you can, and some of you are at earlier stages and you're just going to learn what you need to be able to do these. And then when you're going to work with somebody who has insulin resistance, family history of diabetes, you just want to keep learning and learning and learning. We have a whole program, the Insulin Resistance Practitioner Training, that teaches all that as well. That's in module level 3. Of our NEPT program, Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training. Leptin receptor, like people, their appetite doesn't get turned off. Leptin is a hormone that's supposed to turn off the appetite once the fat cells are nice and full. And when we have too much leptin and we have leptin resistance, then the leptin signal, it doesn't get to the brain to say, hey, stop eating. So when people have problems with the receptor, then it's associated with increased snacking because they don't get the message that you're full, just stop eating. The GLUT2 is a transporter. That's a cell receptor that actually allows the glucose transport into the cells attached to insulin. So this is a big one when it comes to insulin resistance. And then we have the FTO. They call it the fatso gene. It's a fat mass and obesity associated protein, alpha-ketoglutarate dependent deoxygenase, FTO. This is, again, related to not feeling satiated, and it reduces the insulin sensitivity. So these folks don't do well on a lot of fat. They gain weight on a lot of fat. They don't feel satiated even after eating fat, and they tend to develop insulin resistance and obesity. So let's look at a few of these in a little bit more detail. This is an important one, the IGF-1R, insulin-like growth factor. It's a polypeptide protein, and it's similar to insulin. So it fools the system. It fools the receptor into thinking it's insulin. So it latches onto it, but then it blocks the receptor. So the real insulin can't get in, causing elevations in insulin and causing elevations in blood sugar, right? It's a tyrosine kinase receptor. That's biochemistry. Signals are caused by the addition of a phosphate molecule on particular tyrosines. For those of you who want to get into the chemistry, binds to the insulin receptor. And increases in IGF-1 can cause insulin resistance in the target tissues. There's a picture, and there's a more in-depth article on it. So the leptin receptor gene associated with snacking behavior, because we don't get the signal that leptin is in the house, that we have enough, that we need to stop eating. And the polymorphism Q223R is associated with insulin resistance. GLUT2, it's the transporter, lets the insulin and glucose into the cells, right? And it's found in hepatocytes, the liver cells, pancreatic beta cells, and intestinal mucosa and kidney. So this is a problem. If we have receptors that don't allow glucose to transport because there's an issue, right? Because there's a problem with the transporter because of a genetic issue, then we're going to have a problem, right? So there's an article you can read if you want to go deeper. So all of this is a layered approach to learning, guys. You know, you're not going to just learn this all at once. So I'm giving you the basics, and then I'm giving you some articles that you can go further with, and we're giving you lots of charts and resources. So as you do more and more of these, you can deepen and deepen and deepen your understanding. FTO, the fat mass and obesity associated protein, aka alpha-ketoglutarate dependent deoxygenase, FTO. It has an effect on not feeling satisfied, similar to the leptin receptor gene. It increases in the hypothalamic expression of FTO are associated with regulation of energy intake, but not feeding rewards. So we don't get rewarded by eating, and it results in overeating associated with obesity and reduces insulin sensitivity. So people that are, you know, blessed with the FTO gene need to be way more careful, and you need to be explaining to people, hey, you're not bad. You don't have low willpower. This is a process. And here's some of the ways that we can edit your diet, lifestyle, stress levels, et cetera, to help you to better handle this. So at least they can, they understand it, and they're more likely to not feel discouraged and defeated. And that always causes people to have problems. More resources. Another one, again, I'm going to go more deeply. Some of these you might see, some of these you may not. A lot of these are not in the 23andMe newer manifestation, the newer database. So people that did their 23andMe's have a raw data that's relatively complete before 2018 or so. From 2018 on, they took out a lot of genetics. So we may not find some of these in there. Some of them you're going to find in, actually, you'll see this one in the Genetic Life Hacks report, which is why I'm giving you the Genetic Life Hacks report. It's not your particular client's Genetic Life Hacks report. What it is a report that shows everything that they have there with an explanation and a link to their article that describes it, should you want to go deeper. Okay, so this one, pancreatic neuronal melanocortin 4, significantly higher levels of blood sugars, and it's associated with obesity. A leptin-regulated melanocortin system modulates energy homeostasis, and the hypothalamic melanocortin neuronal circuits regulate insulin secretion. So you're kind of more prone to obesity and more, and you're going to have this person work harder. But you know, once they understand that there's a reason that they're not a bad person, that they're not, they didn't fail their diets because they're a bad person, you can work with them and you can work on the emotional pieces. You can work on the habits. These are a couple that you know, you've heard before. Everybody's heard of MTHFR. C677T is the most common and the most problematic of the major MTHFR SNPs. There are dozens of MTHFR SNPs, guys, but these are the two that have been associated with issues. So the other one that's not as much related to blood sugar is MTHFR 1298C. Okay, that one is not as problematic, let's just say, as the C677T. But here's the thing, people use this as an excuse. Oh, I can't get pregnant because I have MTHFR. Oh, I can't have energy. Oh, I can't because I have this. And some of the healthiest people in the world, including me, have double MTHFRs, right? And the lifestyle, the epigenetics, the factors, the choices. So we want to empower people to make good choices and feel empowered. So it helps to convert homocysteine to methionine. When we get a buildup of homocysteine, we're going to tend to have high levels of inflammation. So with this, yes, you're going to have to work harder at getting down the homocysteine. The SNP can lead to high homocysteine, and high homocysteine can lead to thyroid receptor resistance. So this is something to keep in mind when you're looking at somebody here. They're like, well, the doctor said I don't have a thyroid problem, but I sure do have the symptoms. They may actually have receptor resistance because of MTHFR and high levels of homocysteine. So don't forget to check these things. And even marginally elevated can be problematic. So the insulin signaling mechanisms get impaired when they took cultured cells and they injected them with homocysteine thiolactone. There was a problem. So when we have this problem with the MTHFR, we can end up with insulin signaling problems and increased risk of obesity. And this has been associated with metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance. There's controversy. There's always controversy, and you need to read and understand and relate it to each individual person. There's a couple of good articles there. When they also have a COMT, catecholamine O-methyltransferase, we'll look at that when we look at the neurotransmitter SNPs. This particular SNP can lead to mood swings. MTRR, in particular, the A66G, is related to B12 recycling. And it converts homocysteine to methionine. Right? So again, we can have a buildup of homocysteine. And so if you have somebody who has double whammy, they have MTHFR C677T and they have MTRR A66G, they're more likely to have a high homocysteine and they have more likely to have issues with insulin resistance and more likely to have weight problems. IRS1, insulin receptor substrate 1, codes for signaling adapter protein. What the heck does that mean? It has a role in transmitting signals from insulin and IGF-1 receptors into the cells. And it may mediate the control of various cellular processes by insulin. So has an association with non-insulin dependent diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and insulin resistance. So again, another article for you to go deeper if you want to. And again, I just want to remind you, we're not looking at all of these on our initial look-see. But if we have somebody who's been trying lots of stuff and They're looking at, why am I not losing weight? Why is my blood sugar still high? Why is my insulin still high? Some of these genes help you to explain it to them and also help you to explain how doing the lifestyle things, the diet things, the extra supplementation and all that you're going to recommend is going to help them break through their plateau. So this is the ATP binding cassette transporter subfamily C membrane. I mean, these weird names. Helps regulate insulin, transport of a lot of molecules, various molecules across the cell membrane, and can result in a failure of insulin release from the beta cells. And this could actually lead to type 1 diabetes. I think I have a list at the end, or at least an article that will get you to, like, if you're concerned about type 1 diabetes risk, that there's a bunch of SNPs that relate to that. And there's a bunch of others that relate to type 2. So PPAR gamma, peroxisome proliferator activated receptor gamma, it regulates adipocyte fat cell differentiation. And it's been identified as an essential mediator for the maintenance of whole body insulin sensitivity, protects the non-adipose tissue against excessive lipid overload, and maintains normal organ function. The last thing we want is the organs to get ridden and riddled with excessive lipid. So this helps protect that. But if there's a SNP here, they may have the visceral adiposity. So the belly is up, but it's not subcutaneous. It's actually from the inside out, which is the most dangerous type of excess belly fat. Okay. And again, diabetes, weight gain, insulin sensitivity, or loss of insulin sensitivity. TCF7L. This one, again, transcription of many genes, passes a signal through the cell surface, affects insulin secretion and glucose production. Ken, you're not going to memorize all this, but you've got these lists so you can look them up and find out more information. It's just saying to you that there's a lot of issues here. And when somebody's complaining that they just can't seem to lose the belly fat, that they just can't seem to get their blood sugars under control, it's worth looking at these and helping them. And not necessarily that first session, you're going to point out to them, like, I see a lot of these SNPs related to blood sugar dysregulation. And that's probably why you have this history of not being able to lose weight, even when you're on a restrictive diet. And actually, the restrictive diets may make it worse. When we work together, we can help you to identify these factors and get the diet, lifestyle, supplement program under control that's going to help you break through your plateau. This one's also associated with gestational diabetes. And so if you have somebody who says, oh, I got gestational diabetes with every pregnancy, red flag, guys, and they may have this particular SNP. Adiponectin. Adiponectin is a friend, right? We want good levels of adiponectin because it helps to stimulate the glucose uptake by the muscle cells and inhibits the glucose production by the liver. So we don't end up with excessive glucose in the blood and decreases appetite. So there's a bunch of foods that can be related to adiponectin and helping the body to make more adiponectin. When they have this particular SNP, though, it's a much higher risk of type 2 diabetes. The SNPs we've talked about up until this point, you're going to find on the Genetic Life Hacks report. And so, which means that they are in 23andMe, at least in the older level of 23andMe. Some of these others are not, but you can find them on something like Self-Decode if you want to go deeper, if you're concerned about this. LIPC, lipase C, hepatic type. It's related to a lipase, which breaks down fat produced in the liver, and it impacts the protein, lipoprotein uptake and HDL level. So it keeps the lipoproteins in balance, except when there's a SNP here. And what happens is usually insulin sensitivity responds to exercise. When somebody is exercising, they're more insulin sensitive, or they become more insulin sensitive. But when they have a SNP in this LIPC, then there's a problem there and they don't have that. So let's look at this one, SLC2A2. I put this in here just because it's been touted as the sweet tooth gene, and it has to do with the glucose transporter receptors, the HGLUT2. A particular form of this mutation, they call it mutation, I quoted that from the article, but it has to do with beta cell differentiation, even in the absence of glucose. Beta cells, remember, are those that produce the insulin. This was a particular study that said people with this particular SNP ate more sugar. They had cravings for sugar. The brain was less sensitive to blood glucose levels and needed to eat more sugar to be full. So that's why they call it the sweet tooth gene. This one, the AKT2, I only left it in because it can be related to severe insulin resistance, maybe something you want to look up. And I had articles that you could go deeper with. So it's related to severe insulin resistance, diabetes, and those are the two RSIDs or specific SNPs that have been studied in this gene. So that's it for the detailed ones that I wanted to go through. This is a chart for you, and it organizes some of the genes by the manifestation. So insulin resistance, abdominal obesity, inflammation, triglyceride elevations. That's a lot of them related to triglycerides. HDL cholesterol. Why do I put these in? Because HDL triglyceride ratio is so critical for helping you to identify cases of insulin resistance before they get there. Here's some additional resources that you can look up. Genes associated with type 1 diabetes, genes associated with insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes, SNPs associated with insulin resistance, genetics of insulin resistance. So there's a bunch of it. So there you go. There's a lot more research you can do, but you don't have to be successful here. You just need to know the basics. Use your charts. I gave you some really cool charts. But what do you have to do? What do you have to do in order to help people when you discover that they have all these SNPs? You know, you've tested them, they have a family history or not, they have problems with abdominal obesity or not, but they have a lot of these SNPs. You want to be watching their labs. I gave you the list of labs at the beginning. You want to have them start to do postprandial glucose testing, whether it's with a traditional glucose meter where they have to prick their finger, or you use any one of the CGMs, continuous glucose meters that are out now. It's possible for you to get access to a CGM without a doctor's prescription by going through one of these companies. I personally use and recommend Thea Health, because they tend to have the best prices, but have your people shop around, find the one that works best for their budget and get it done. You can go to drritamarie.com/CGM and you can set yourself up as an affiliate. So if you're going to recommend that people get the CGMs, that you actually can have a little bit of an extra income stream. Take a look at the site. I've got some great resources for you. I gave you a link to the metabolic report from Genetic Life Hacks, the metabolic report from Self-Decode, and my chart, which is 16 pages long, of all the different ones that we gathered from these various reports. So you're able to find these. And that's not your first step, though. Those are for advanced work. Those are for you once you've gotten the person in your program and you want to really dig deeper with them if need be. Those are the ones that are there. What I find is that when you have good ammunition, if you want to call it, when you have good reasons for people to make changes, their genes, their labs, their history, you can get people to do the things you want them to do because they understand and they don't want those horrific risks. So this is a good start, and we'll see you on the next one.